Welcome to another episode of Comedy Wham Presents with me, your host, Valerie, and sometime kitty co-hosts Miss Purrington and Mookie are safely at home. More on that in a moment. ComedyWham.com is your place to go for features about all Austin comedy. In addition to podcasts, Comedy Wham brings you articles, album reviews, our advice column, all of my Austin Chronicle articles on the Austin comedy scene, our festivals page, which lists upcoming festivals across the country and the world, and if you're into it, the FPIA contest page, that's going to come up sooner than we realize, actually, for 2024. Anywho, we're best known for our events page for live comedy shows in Austin, Houston, and DFW, where 100% of the entries you see come from comics and producers. If you want your show featured in the calendar, click the Submit a Show from the top of the homepage or events page to complete the short survey. It's free and easy. Tag us on your Instagram stories and we'll share your show promo to our Instagram followers. Want to support these resources we provide? You can donate to Comedy Wham on PayPal, Venmo, or even Patreon. Click the Support CW icon on our homepage to see the ways that you can help us. Now back to our podcast. Launched in 2016, the podcast project brings you funny people and their stories. As a fan, I like to delve into... Just noticed a weird printing thing on my... Anyway, as a fan, I like to delve into a comic's background and motivations and will usually take a detour along the way, like I just did. Consider the interview a way for you to get to know the folks that make the Austin comedy scene one of the best in the country. If you like this podcast, please rate and review us. Today, we are recording from the Fallout Theater podcast studio, so shout out to Garrett Buss for getting us all set up. Our guest today was an au pair in Australia, moved to New Zealand, which is where she actually got her start in stand-up, and then has moved to San Diego, LA, all before settling in Austin for the time being. She is the host of the Bottom of the Barrel every Tuesday at the Comedy Mothership. She just launched the Celebrity Guest Comedy Show at Black Rabbit Comedy Club, and she is going to be on this year's Moon Tower Just for Last Festival. And now Comedy Wham presents our guest, a mutual Lopez, Pam Lopez.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for trekking here. We had a few false starts with getting this interview scheduled. But
I know, it worked out, though.
It did. We're here in the lovely Fallout Theater, which you've never been in the podcast studio. You've performed a few times.
Yes, I've been here in Fallout, but never in the depths of the the classrooms.
Yeah, at any point where you're like, oh my God, she's going to kill me. This is like the dark, this is literally a bomb shelter.
It does feel a little bit like a bomb shelter. There's a bathroom in the podcast studio. If everything were to end, this would be where I'd want to be. This is the safest place in downtown right now.
It really is. It
really is. Right underneath the Masonic Lodge.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, thank you for joining me today on the podcast. I'm so excited. I think the first time I saw you perform was actually at A Sure Thing.
Does that sound wow. Right? That seems right.
Yeah. I feel like I've known you for a while. At least a year ago. And I keep seeing you pop up, of course, on all the Mothership shows. And I confess, I've yet to make it. I keep saying I'm going to make plans. I might make plans. You can't make last-minute plans to go see a show at the Mothership.
You can't.
Yeah. So
you cannot.
My life does not currently operate other than last-minute.
That's totally fair. That's very comedy of you.
So being able to catch you, you know, at the Fallout or, you know, you just launched a new show at Black Rabbit, maybe I'd have a better success.
I feel like I'm everywhere. I feel like I see you all the time.
Yeah, that's nice.
And like, because you said that, I was like, I feel like you've seen my set a lot. And I was like, yeah, do you really want to see me again? Yeah. You know what I do.
Oh my gosh, yes, I do know what you do, and actually we're gonna talk about that, but not before I ask you my official icebreaker question.
Oh, exciting.
So it is one word to describe your past.
Oh. One word. Damn, I want to make it really good at that. I don't know. eclectic? I feel like that was a kind of a cop-out.
That's the fun of that question is, you know, you never know what your brain, all this your synapses past. Will.
Yeah, there's so much to encapsulate, to encapsulate in one word.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so what I wanted to say about seeing you is I always do a lot of research before I do my interviews, and I was searching for you, which is very difficult. Like, searching for myself in Google is hard because Valerie Lopez is actually a very common name.
Yes.
Sam Lopez, a very common name. So I have to, you know, like, really...
There's a lot of us on both sides of the gender.
Right. Right. But I found an old video clip of you from, I think it was... Does 2016 sound right?
That's probably right.
Yeah.
That's about when I really started.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's so Sam. And so it's always fun to have that conversation about, you know, you find old clips and you realize they've stayed true to who they were when they started.
Uh-huh.
And your comedy is very twists and turns and naughty. It's very naughty humor.
I like the word naughty because it implies that it's like, yeah, but I'm like cute about it.
Yeah, right. And I'm like, oh, even at her start, she was this way. And I'm like, oh, that's really cool to see that it's just, you know, it's still the core of, mm-hmm. of who you are, just refined after, what is that, 8 years of working at it. Minus whatever happened in COVID.
I mean, I guess it counts. You know, it's crazy to think like there's just a year and a half, two years of my life that are just like a blip. Just take it out.
Yeah. So I got a lot of my homework by watching an episode of you with Ali Woe's Detox.
Oh, yeah.
Podcast.
That was fun.
That was fun. I'm like, okay, I definitely would have opted out of the whole IV vitamin thing.
Oh, that was crazy. I'd never done that before. And now it's like, I want to do it all the time.
Oh, really?
I've done it like twice since. But I'm like, oh. You just brought it up. I'm like, well, I should make it happen.
So one of the things that was really cool is you got your start in comedy in New Zealand
mm-hmm.
after finishing out some au pairing in Australia, and basically it was, you didn't have enough money to fly home, so you made it, you know, literally across the pond to New Zealand.
Yeah, I had enough money to go to New Zealand. I didn't have enough money to fly back to the States, but I could get another work visa in New Zealand. I couldn't work in Australia anymore at that point.
Yeah,
so I was like, okay, I'll go there and make some money, and then I'll get home. It was fun.
So I took a trip to New Zealand right at the millennia, because you know, everybody thought, oh my God, you know, the world's going to end.
Oh yeah.
But also, not Auckland, I already forgot the name of the town, but there's a town on the eastern border of South Island. It's the first big city that sees a new year.
Oh.
So where in New Zealand were you based?
I was near Auckland.
Okay.
I was like, I was technically in Auckland.
Okay.
But like just outside city limits.
Yeah.
And that's where I did all the comedy. I know which city you're talking about. I just can't think of the name now that you say that.
But the whole country is amazing.
It's stunning. It's beautiful.
Like, I would love to retire there. I would love to just, you know, end my days there. It's just a beautiful, beautiful country, and people are very nice.
The people are very nice.
The hard thing is driving on the other side of the road.
That's true. You know what? You get used to it so quickly.
I guess.
You know what? You think it's going to be hard, but you're also driving on the other side of the car. So if you just kind of like imagine that your body needs to be in the middle of the road when you're driving, that's sort of how I always remember. Like, I need to be as close to the middle of the road.
Okay.
But then, like, every once in a while, you'll forget and you go down, like, a one-way street.
A roundabout? I would never make it through a roundabout.
One time I had, like, a couple of the kids I was nannying in the car, and I ended up on the wrong side of the road. And I was just like, shit. And I remember going, hey, so your kids heard some words, but I want you to know that it was because we were also in danger. I would never speak like that unless your kids are about to die.
So what, like from Ali's podcast, I got that like the family that you were nannying for, they were not a lot of fun. the kids weren't the issue. It was just the family themselves. And so you took that and you wanted to talk to people.
Well, it was more... So it was my third family that I'd worked with on that, like, part of my life. Uh-huh. And they were so... It wasn't that they were bad. It was just the first two families were so great. And I was, like, genuinely friends with them. And then this family, like, they didn't want to really know me, which was fine. Hmm. But then they were also in an unhappy marriage. And I just didn't want to be around. So I started, like... When I started going on lots of dates to get out of the house, and this guy took me to, like, comedy show. And I was like, well, I should go to more stand-up. I like comedy. And I, like, literally never thought about doing stand-up at that point. And then I just started hanging out at comedy clubs. You know, you go to enough open mics, and you're watching people, and you're like, I could do this. You watch enough people bomb, you're like, this doesn't look that hard. And then you do it yourself, and you're like, this is much harder than I anticipated. This is so hard.
So Auckland, I know that Auckland has a comedy festival. From the aforementioned, we have a festivals page, which is woefully out of date, but I'll update it soon. But I know they have a comedy festival, so they must have a scene, and you obviously are evidence.
They have
that.
A very small scene. Well, at least when I was there, they had a club called The Classic that was downtown, and then... They had, like, one open mic there a week, but you had to, like, email in, and you'd only get up maybe, like, once a month.
Oh.
And then there were, like, open mics and smaller shows at different bars, like how, like, you know, it is here.
Yeah.
But when you're a young comic, you kind of want to be up every night of the week, and I was maybe, if I was lucky, getting up once or twice a week.
So after the first open mic that you did, like, the bug hit you? Like, you were...
Yeah, it was pretty quick. I really liked it. I had done musical theater in high school, and I was like, it gave me that feeling of like, oh yeah, I forgot what it's like to be on stage. I liked how it was all dependent on me. That was nice. And yeah, I kind of like, it hit me fast. I was planning on going to Africa to teach English with the Peace Corps.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, when I was traveling, I had been like, oh, what am I going to go next? I wanted to keep traveling. I was like 24 or 25. I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. And I was like, oh, if I could just keep traveling forever, that'd be great. And so I applied to the Peace Corps. I had, like, maybe it was in my second interview with them. And they had just assigned me a location. And I, like, had to make the final decision.
Oh,
and I was
like,
but you had to commit to 2 years in the Peace Corps. So it was like, oh, comedy or 2 years in the Peace Corps.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was pretty easy for comedy to win. Because I was so stoked to go to the Peace Corps. But also, I was going to Malawi. I don't remember. A country in Africa that I'm not actually very familiar with at all. And I remember talking to her and, like, what the lifestyle would be. And it just, like, it would have been a great experience, but it would have been such a commitment, so serious. Mm-hmm. Like, you're kind of in a situation, especially as a woman, where it's like, well, you have to follow all the rules or else you know what might happen to you.
Right.
And I was like, I don't know. It seems so restrictive. So I was like, let's go with comedy.
Wow.
Totally different route.
Yeah, completely different. Yeah, probably not much of a comedy scene in whatever that country is.
Really.
Sorry,
it didn't
to
seem
that country,
like that.
But yeah. Wow. So in hindsight, as you're sitting here today, I think I know the answer, but do you feel like good peace in your heart that you made the right choice?
I still don't know. No.
Oh.
No, I'm glad I didn't do it. It would have been fun. I have a lot of friends who taught English in other countries, and they seem really happy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I have, like, the best life. It's so awesome. And Austin's awesome.
Yeah.
I can't imagine being anywhere else but where I am right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a good, you know, mindset to have.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you spent how long in Auckland after you started doing comedy?
Maybe, like, 3 or 4 months.
Okay.
And then I moved... Well, I flew to Hawaii first because, like, maybe I could live in Hawaii and do comedy. I was really trying to make it into, like, a never-ending vacation.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it was in a really big scene there. And so I was like, I guess I have to go back to to the mainland. Not that Hawaii is not a state.
Yeah.
I have to go back where everyone else is.
Yeah.
And I had cousins in San Diego, so I stayed with them, and that's how I ended up there first, and then L.A.
Yeah. And San Diego has a nice little scene. I talked to Lauren Jameson last mm-hmm. year, and she kind of grew up in that comedy scene.
It's a great scene.
Yeah.
And it was really good when I was there because a lot of, like, comics that you see at the Mothership were there at the same time. Mm-hmm. Derek, my husband, Asan Ahmad, who's also at the Mothership. Mm-hmm. Brian Simpson was there at that time. So I got to see a lot of, like, young, up-and-coming, like, comics who were about, like, 5-6 years ahead of me.
Yeah.
But they also knew older comics than them that were coming down to do their shows from mm-hmm. L.A. So it was it's a great access point to Los Angeles. Yeah. And there's a lot of stage time for young comics there as opposed to in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even when I moved to L.A., I was driving down to San Diego, like, every other weekend to do spots.
Yeah, yeah. Well, people can listen to the Detox episode with you. You go into great detail about the kind of the politics of the Comedy Store and, figuring out how to, it's a model that's been brought over through the Mothership where it's, I call it an apprenticeship where you have to apply to be a door person and then you get, that gives you access to stage time and, of course, some of the greatest comedy minds in the world. And so we don't have to go into the great details of that, but getting to see and perform at the Comedy Store, that's for a lot of people before COVID, that was like the ultimate
yes
goal.
Especially at that time, because it was really hot then. You know, the clubs kind of go on and off, and like if this is the sexy club.
Yeah.
But right then, it was the Comedy Store. So it was really cool to be there at that time.
Yeah.
And Joe Rogan was there like 2 or 3 nights a week.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone was there at that time.
Yeah. So I have to ask this because it's part of who you are. You're married to a comic, so mm-hmm. you started dating this comic. You guys have been together for like 8+8.
Yeah, like 7-8 years.
Yeah.
I guess so as long as I've been doing stuff.
So you didn't meet him in New Zealand. You met him probably at
We met in San Diego.
Yeah. Okay. So you guys have been, well, he's certainly been part of your comedy journey this whole mm-hmm. time. What is it like to be able to, come home at, 4 o'clock in the morning, because that's what comedy life is like,
uh-huh.
and be able to decompress about, it's different than, oh, honey, I'm home. You walk in with a briefcase and, here's how my day went. Oh, Debbie from accounting was really terrible to me today. What is that?
I mean, it's kind of like that. We gossip a ton. That's the best thing about being married to another comedian is, I guess I feel this way if I was married to a non-comic because I'd still gossip to my husband no matter what.
Yeah.
But Derek and I will come home and like, so many people will tell us, don't tell anyone. And like, I'm going to tell Derek. Like, I'm married to him. But we won't tell anyone.
Yeah.
it's nice to come home. We gossip for about a half an hour to an hour, however long it takes for the DoorDash food to get home.
Oh.
And then we have very unhealthy habits. We eat at like 2 or 3 in the morning. I don't know. It's so funny because when he's out of town, I live like this totally different, like very organized life. Like I'll come home from comedy, I'll take a shower, I'll go to bed immediately.
Uh-huh.
Whereas when he's there, I'm like, oh yeah, let's drink, let's smoke, let's order food. Who cares if we go to bed at 5 in the morning? But it's great. And it's nice because he's been doing it longer than I have. So he has a lot of insight and I've had a lot of advantages because of that. Like, I've met a lot of people because he's friends with them or he's meeting them. So I do get, I feel like, a leg up in that because I get to run in circles that I otherwise would not have run in at such a young comedy age.
Yeah.
But then again, it's really stressful, Like, I see him or I see our friends who have been doing it longer, and I'm like, I want to be like that.
Mm.
But I think I don't want to, like, discredit myself, but I don't know if I would be any good if I didn't have that kind of competition. I'm very, I'm very competitive, but if the competition's not, like, in my face, I can, like, talk myself out of it and be like, It's fine. I'm happy where I am. But like seeing him all the time get stuff, I'm like, I have to be better. I need to surpass him. I want to crush his career in a smithereen.
All right, this is being recorded, yeah. Sam. If you really want him to know this, okay, he knows. Well, I guess he's.
Well, we're both competitive. Yeah. Like, you know, we play a lot of games at home, and you know, it really brings out who you really are. Yeah. And it's not pretty.
Okay. All right. Well, that's enough Derek talk because it's the Sam episode. So I just wanted to, you know, kind of get that out into the universe for people that for some reason didn't know, because you actually make that a part of your stage, your jokes. And
so, yeah, I talk about him a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. So how long did you stay in San Diego, and compare your you were in Auckland for 2 to 3 months performing at the very slow pace that, you know, allowed based on the small comedy scene. Then you get to San Diego, which is a little more developed of a comedy scene. How did you feel your experience between Auckland and San Diego helped, like, push you with this choice that you had made, I'm doing comedy?
It was a significantly different atmosphere. When I left Auckland, I remember so many comedians being like, why are you leaving? You don't even have to leave yet. Your visa's not up. You know, it's really competitive in the United States. Mm. You'll never make it there, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I don't know what it's like now, but at that time, it was this... There was clearly a route in New Zealand to, like, being some kind of working comic, whether that was, like... you know, working locally or, you know, getting on the Fringe Festival or they had, like, you know, local TV. A lot of people would go into radio from there or TV. Mm-hmm. But the idea of coming to the States, everyone's like, oh, you're just throwing that all out the window.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. Like, I thought that was kind of lame, you know? And, like, well, yeah. The whole point of, like, doing this is kind of for competition, not competition like, I got to be better than everyone else, but it's like, well, I mean, I'm not going to get good unless, you know, I am feeling competitive. Mm-hmm. I kind of need that.
Yeah. And that you're in an environment where you can go up more than
and you can go up more. Exactly. And they're stylistically there. They work more British kind of sounding and a little bit of like how American stand up was, but, a little bit. It just, the young scene there wasn't as far ahead as the young scenes in the States were, because I think of the competition aspect.
Yeah.
So when I got to San Diego, it was competitive to get local spots. It was competitive to get on the mic. I mean, there was plenty of stage time available, but it did feel like, okay, I gotta work hard at this. Mm-hmm. I have to be around. I have to network. I have to prove to people that I can get a laugh right up top. And I learned a lot from people in San Diego more. Like, there was more emphasis on writing a joke and understanding, like, the structure of stand-up versus just going up and telling a funny story.
Yeah.
Like, you'll meet a lot of comics, especially in really small scenes, where they're like, I don't really do set up punchline. I'm more like, just tell stories about myself. Mm. And it's like, yeah, I mean, I think storytelling is, like, a really big aspect. But to be like, I don't do set up punchline, it's like, well, that's kind of like,
that's the whole thing.
What it is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's this sort of, I think, with smaller scenes, there can be a coddling because, one, people are kind of competing on a social level more than through their stand-up. Mm-hmm. So sometimes that happens and that can hold people back. So I do feel like San Diego was great because everyone was... okay, I'm here, but I'm going to be in L.A. next year or in 2 years. Yeah. They all had, like, goals to do the next thing.
Yeah. So were you able to go up every single night?
In San Diego, you could go up every single night. Yeah. There was an open mic at the Madhouse that was every day of the week. And then lots of other open mics, lots of small shows. There's the Madhouse had shows. There was the... ACC, the American Comedy Club company, and there was a La Jolla comedy store and a club called The Palace, which is now the Mic Drop in San Diego. Okay. And they all had weekends, they all had, you know, showcases, so there was plenty of stage time. Mm-hmm. And, like, all those club shows were, you know, kind of the top tier. Like, you wanted to get good enough so that you could get booked at the clubs.
Yeah. How long did you spend in San Diego before making the move to...
I was only there a year.
Okay.
Derek wanted, had he just been offered the door guy job at the Comedy Store in LA, and so he was going to move up at the end of the year, and we had been dating like about a year at that point. So I was like, okay, I guess I'll go with you. Even though it was really hard to leave because there was so much stage time in San Diego, and LA was, it was almost impossible to get up there.
Yeah. Well, certainly as a newbie at the store, it's near impossible. So you have to, you know, put thousands and thousands of miles on your car just driving around to, you know, paid mics. And
oh my gosh, yeah. So many paid mics. We didn't have a car, so I would take, like, the red line all the way down to downtown. I had, like, a whole map of, like, if I get this mic, then I can get to this mic. And this is the only mic that actually costs me money. I was really good at that, like, figuring out, okay, like, what if I go to all the ones where I just buy a drink? I get a Shirley Temple. I tip $1. I think I can get through this night without spending 25 bucks.
Wow.
Yeah, it was fun.
Were you able to get up as often, at least get, you know, those reps in?
Not as often as I was. Yeah. I was probably, there were, I would try to, like, have nights where I would get a bunch of spots and then, like, take a night off. If I knew I wasn't going to get more than one spot that night, I would just go to the club and watch the show. Mm-hmm. So, like, there were some nights that were, like, more... like, okay, I can get, like, five mics in tonight. But then other nights, it's like, there's only one show of spot available, and it's going to cost me 10 bucks. I'd be like, I'll go to the club and watch comedians.
All right, so that's all the logistics. What do you think you took away from these three different scenes as far as your own comedy and, like, how to approach your comedy?
I guess, well, the West Coast comparatively to, like, the East Coast is way more physical. And they do way more act outs and faces and stuff. A lot of New York comedians will make fun of West Coast comedians for their faces or their act outs or belittle it as
oh
if
my
it's.
Gosh.
But I really like that aspect because I like to be silly. So I felt like I tried in California to be sillier. That was a big focus, even though I was also learning to write jokes at that point. I wish I had spent some time in New York now, because I think I'd be a little bit, have better writing, maybe. Maybe a little tighter. Well, you know, they can't move around in New York. They don't
That's
have
true.
Big stages,
yeah, stages,
so they never do act outs.
So when I had Amy on, that was one of the big lessons for her, is, like, she really had to just chop away words from her sets, because New York, they just don't have the patience for all the big flowery.
They're great at editing down. That's something, like, I think on both ends of the spectrum you just need to do. Always it could be shorter. And comedians hate to do it because it's like, but that's taking away from my ultimate amount of time. It's like, yeah, we gotta write another one.
Exactly. Okay, so let me see if it's time for the card game or not. Because there is something, and I just had the thought. Okay, so I talked about at the very beginning about watching this video of you that was probably from around the 2016 time mark. And we haven't talked about, like, your actual comedic style and how you approach writing, except we've just kind of talked about it now. Do you feel like, as far as the style of jokes that you like to write, it's pretty much the same you back then? You're just refining it? Or have you had those dalliances with, oh, I'm going to try this kind of style. I'm going to try so-and-so's kind of style and see if that works for me.
Yes and no. Yeah. I do feel like I'm much... very still myself, but I'm always trying to do something different. Like, whenever I have a joke that doesn't sound like my other jokes, I get really excited, and I'm like, oh yeah, this isn't like the same brand, or this is kind of weird for me. I do this, like, kind of weird karaoke type bit I've been doing, and I enjoy doing it. And some people really like it, and a lot of people really hate it.
Oh, no.
But I think that's good, because it's something that, it's not like me, and part of the reason I feel like my style is the way it is, because I just want to appeal to a mass majority. I want to be, and like, this works, you know, as fast as I could possibly get to the punchline. And that's kind of like my problem. Like, I learned the, like, okay, this is how you write a joke. But now I'm so anxious to get to that laugh as soon as possible. I don't really experiment as much as I wish I did.
Oh, interesting.
So I have been, in the last year especially, been trying to experiment more and do different kinds of material, although I ultimately, at shows, I ultimately go back to who I am because I'm like, I must perform. I have to get a good laugh.
Since you're joined at the hip with another person who's performing comedy, I suppose that making the move to Austin was almost a foregone conclusion, or did you actually consider staying in L.A.?
He wanted to go back to L.A.
Okay.
That was the plan, and I don't think I ever wanted to go back to L.A.
When
we stayed in Los Angeles about 6 months after the shutdown, and then we moved in with different family members. We went and stayed with my uncle for a while. We stayed with my parents, so that we could just, like, I was working online a little bit, and so we didn't have to pay as much money. But he had always thought, I had the job at the Comedy Store at that point, and he always thought we would move back because it's like, well, when it opens up, you'll have your job and blah, blah, blah. We can go back and get right back on schedule.
Yeah.
And I had always kind of in the back of my mind been like, well, maybe this is the opportunity to move to New York.
Yeah.
I was not thinking about Austin at all.
Yeah.
I didn't even think of it as an option until, I guess, it was like pretty much a year, like maybe after the shutdown. It was the February of 2020. It shut down in 2019.
Shut down, it was in 20. So in 2021.
So that January, February, we started seeing that Joe Rogan was here. Tony Hinchcliffe was here, who we both kind of knew. We knew Tony Hinchcliffe pretty well.
Yeah.
And then Dylan Sullivan, who we really knew. He was a Comedy Store door guy. And we had all been friends for a while. And we saw he was here. And I was like, I think we need to move to Austin.
Mm.
And shortly after seeing Dylan, we saw that Fahim Anwar had been here during that time, and Brian Holtzman had moved here for a while.
Mm.
And I was like, they wouldn't just go there if there wasn't stage time.
Yeah.
And so I kind of talked Derek into it. At first he was like, are you sure? And then we called like all of our comedy friends. They're like, let's do it. And like only one person would go with us, Jeffrey Berner.
Uh-huh.
And we ended up moving here. And then almost everyone we asked to come with us has moved here since then. And they'll tell you that it was because of Joe or because of Tony. And it's like, bullshit, I told you to move here.
Let the record show.
Let the record show. I called you and said, let's get the band back together.
So what did you think about the Austin comedy scene since you didn't know anything about it? And at the time, the mothership wasn't open. It was just a, this is happening. From the Rogan camp, and what did you think? Because it is you obviously don't know it before COVID,
mm-hmm.
but it was a very different scene than it is today. But how did it feel to you compared to what you knew in the LA scene?
Oh, it felt like how San Diego felt.
Hmm.
It was a nice scene to come up in. A lot of stage time.
Yeah.
A lot of comics, you know, who are young, and then some comics who'd been doing it for maybe a decade. That's a good kind of variation, I think. When I got here, Creek in the Cave must have opened up like maybe 3 months after that.
Yeah.
Or like within the first 3 months. And they gave me a job. I worked there for like six months.
Okay.
So it was kind of nice. There was a club there. The Vulcan was acting as a club at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
What were the other clubs? Was that it? I guess Cap was still closed.
Cap was closed until summer of 21.
So,
Or actually maybe even 22. Oof. Crazy how that timeline
I think it was 22.
Like
it was a long time.
Yeah. I don't know that the valve was open. The Fallout was pretty strict about not reopening for a while. So as far as clubs,
it wasn't a lot.
There wasn't. I
mean, but there was stage time. Everyone was doing shows downtown
clubs and
bars and clubs. Mm-hmm. I think I was most kind of just, because after the lockdown, I was most just like, wow, people are out. And even and when I got here, people were still wearing masks.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, that's so cool that we, it's like, in my mind, I was like, oh my God, we're going to forever be wearing masks. Yeah. But it was just cool to be out. So it was hard to kind of even gauge the scene because so much of the scene wasn't even out yet. Like a lot of the old scene where it seemed like we're kind of, there was almost this political aspect to it where they were like, well, we're not coming out because it's the wrong thing to do.
Right.
And then all these people were moving here like, that's the only reason I came. And I think when they did come back, I felt kind of bad because it was like, oh, wow, I'm just meeting you, and I think you're, like, this new person, and you're, like, an established person in the scene. I'm like, oh, hi, how long have you been doing comedy? I'm like, forever. I grew up here. I'm like, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was definitely, it's been an adjustment period, I think. But I feel like we're on the other side of that.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
You know, whole them versus
it's so crazy to think how long ago it was.
Yeah. Like, we can't even remember the proper time.
I know. It's like, it really wasn't that long ago, I guess.
Yeah.
No, and now the scene, it's really interesting. There's been a meshing. Like, I forget how many people that I feel like probably just moved here with me were here already.
Yeah.
All the time. Like, oh, yeah, you were here.
I'm amused by the fact that you said you didn't have a car in L.A., and even just us trying to get this organized, like, you still don't have a car.
Still don't have a car.
And in Texas, to not have a car, I mean, L.A., yeah, you've got the public transportation to support, you know, that massive population. But in Austin, like, I don't know how you do it, to be honest.
It is crazy. I really love not having a car. We live right by the university, right? I live in West Campus.
Okay.
It's so nice over there. I can, everything I need, I can walk to. Yeah. I can walk to the grocery store. I can walk to the campus. That's where I work out. I could walk here if I had wanted to. I just was lazy and just like, oh, I'm going to Uber. And then the bus system's pretty decent for that part of town.
Yeah.
I think if everything wasn't right on 6th Street, I'd have to get a car. But most days I don't need to even get an Uber. Like, a friend will come pick me up and take me downtown, and then I'll just walk to all my spots from there.
How many spots what's the most number of spots that you've had in any given night?
5.
Wow.
Yes. I'm pretty sure that's the most.
Wow.
That was a good night.
Yeah. Goodness.
And I know people who are doing like 6 or 7. Because if you get, like, all the door guys, especially at the mothership, a lot of them are getting, some of them are getting, like, both shows at the mothership, and then they'll go to a spot at Sunset, and then they'll do a spot at a bar across the street, all while they're on the clock. The club's really cool about that. Yeah. Like, if someone's covering your spot, it's fine. So different comics will come in and be like, I'll cover you if you cover me tomorrow.
Nice.
And they'll just work while they go do their spot, and then they come back.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're getting, like, tons of time.
Yeah.
But it does feel good to have like a 5-spot night, because then I don't have to hang out as much.
Yeah.
It's just like show, and then at the end of the night, bye guys.
Yeah. yeah, because you're a young bride at this point.
I'm a
young
bride. I also just thought, I'm kind of an introvert. Like, I like being out with people, and then there's like this point of the night where like a switch goes off, and like I can't be with you anymore.
Yeah. Well, as the old lady in the room, I can tell you there's a certain point in the night where it's like I can't stay awake.
I know, it hits pretty quick. I feel like I'm there on that.
Yeah.
It's like around 11:30 where I'm just like, this is too late. I should be home.
Okay, I'm going to ask you about some of your new projects that you've got, but first we're going to do this card game, and
cool.
This is our little intermission. So, this is an open-ended card game, Where Should We Begin? By Esther Perel. She is this world-renowned psychologist, and she just came up with this card game with open-ended questions. So you're going to point to the question that you want me to read to you, and then you will read the other one to me.
Okay.
So we're both going to get a chance at this. So pick the one that, point to the one you want me to read to you.
This one.
That one. Okay. So I will read that one to you, and you will read this one to me, and we'll see what we come up with.
Oh, did I read yours first?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm like, oh my God, it must be really good.
Okay. Few people know I could talk for hours about.
Oh. Oh my goodness.
And it's very, like, specific.
It is. I mean, there's a lot of things I could talk specifically about. I could talk about Post Malone forever.
Really?
Oh, I love Posty.
I love Post Malone.
I am a hardcore Posty head.
That's so funny.
I'm like that demographic that he and all of the fans of his talk about, like that old suburban lady that just loves his music.
Well, it's also, like, good to play for your kids, so that might be that aspect of it, of, you know, like, I can listen to this, and I don't feel guilty about everyone else hearing it.
Yeah. I've seen him four times live.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And I've seen him with my son a couple times, my boyfriend, and, yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah, the other...
You're like a real post head.
Yeah. For the record, I can't listen to any of the music. If I were to play... My son loves Post Malone, too, but the music that he listens to, I think Post Malone is, like, too basic for him now, because he just listens to... I can't keep up. There's symbols, too many symbols in the name, and you have to read it a certain way, and I'm like... What?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
How old is your son?
He's 17.
Oh yeah. So
yeah. So yeah.
He knows what's cool.
He knows what's cool. Yeah. He just told me that he and his friends are gonna go see 21 Savage, which I'm okay with 21 Savage, but so the latest person that I'm addicted to is JID.
Really? I like him too.
Oh my God. Love. I can't stop listening. Because his you know, there's such a parallel sometimes between music and comedy, like in terms of the witticism and the turn of phrase and like the puns. And he could easily be a comedic actor just the based on his writing, just some of the stuff he comes up with. I love him.
That's
so anyway,
cool.
He's opening for 21 Savage.
Oh,
and I'm like, you're gonna go with your friends to see 21 Savage and JID's performing? I want to go. And he's like, no, Mom, you are not tagging along with me and my friends. So,
well, it stinks. It's not fair.
I know. Anyway, so that's me.
Did you know, like right as when Post Malone was first coming out, he did this interview with Charlamagne the God on The Breakfast Club?
I don't think I saw that.
Okay, so there's this interview, and she's actually done two with him, and Charlamagne the God's like really mean to Post Malone. My brother sent me this video, like literally the other day, that's why I'm thinking of it, about like how this happened and Charlamagne the God was really rude to Post Malone. It's like a 7-minute like documentary YouTube thing about this incident.
Uh-huh.
And then my brother just sends me a message that says, this pisses me off. And I'm like, bro, this happened like 10 years ago. Why do you care? When you said that, I was like, oh my God, I was literally just thinking about Post Malone.
Well, you know, I get super defensive about people because they dismiss him with the face tattoos.
Yeah.
And they don't know the backstory to the tattoos. And he's a good old boy from Texas. He's a little shy kid from, you know, the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And I'm like, I grew up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, so I kind of know, you know, the environment, general environment that he grew up in. And he was just a shy little kid, and he just, you know, tootled with a song on his computer and... The world blew up, but he was still a nice, you know, quiet, introverted kid.
He seems like a really sweet guy.
He's very sweet, yeah.
And his music is amazing.
It really is, yeah, yeah. Of all of his albums, the last one, a little slow for me to adopt, but it's all still good. And I desperately want the country album.
Oh, it is perfect.
Yeah, because he, you know, It's kind of in his roots being a Texas boy.
Yeah.
And he can pull it off. Oh, and for every sure. time he does a cover, like, did you, during COVID, did you watch his, like, from his Hamlet in Utah? He did, like, it was a lot of covers, and he did, or maybe it was all Nirvana covers. And I'm like, oh my God.
I think I heard, like, one or two of those.
Yeah. So he's just the vocal range.
That's cool.
Yeah. Anyway, so this is now turned into the Postie show.
Yeah, let's Postie just talk about Post Malone.
Yeah. All right, your question, okay. Sam. I can't believe I get away with, or I got away with.
Oh, I can't believe I got away with, I don't know, doing stand-up. Actually, yeah, I think I would say that. I can't believe I got away with doing stand-up. My parents, they wanted me. I don't know. I always wanted to do something artistic. Mm. Like, when I went to college, I wanted to be an actress.
Yeah.
And everyone kept, like, always talking me out of it. Like, they talked me out of acting.
Really?
Yes. Like, well, my parents wanted me to have a really, like, you know, a real person job and a real life. Like, I think, ideally for them, I would have been a teacher and gotten married and stayed in Maryland, where I'm from. But... so I didn't just, I stopped acting in college. I stopped singing kind of in college. And honestly, I like went and started nannying. And I think that's the thing that got me away from that. Cause that energy of like, okay, you need to do this. These are all the checks of what you need to do to be an adult.
Yeah.
So the fact that I get to do stand up in general, I'm like, oh wow, I can't believe I get to do this. Everyone tried to keep me from doing all these other things. And this is way worse. This is so much worse than being an actress. They talk about it all the time. They're like, so have you ever got, do you ever get acting auditions? If you get into acting, will you quit doing stand-up?
Oh my God.
They like actively want me to like move on from stand-up, even if it was into acting or some other aspect of performance.
But you know, there's a lot of successful comedic actors.
Yes.
Out there, so.
But that's what they think. Like, I was auditioning for certain things, and like, oh, so if you got that, you wouldn't do stand-up anymore. And it's always like this, yeah, and then you don't have to do stand-up. So I kind of like that they hate it.
Yeah.
My mom doesn't even acknowledge that I do stand-up.
Oh, that's so weird. Mom,
it's super
mom,
weird.
Stop.
It's super weird. She never talks about it. She started acknowledging that Derek is a stand-up, but only because he's friends with... Well, so her friends had been like, your son-in-law's on shows with Joe Rogan. Oh, my gosh. And she doesn't know who Joe Rogan is. But she knows that it's impressive to her friends.
Yeah.
So now she's, like, kind of interested.
Oh, my gosh.
But, yeah, I can't believe I get to do this.
Yeah. Well, Mom's coming for a rude awakening because every time we release a podcast episode, we write an article that goes with it. And you're going to... Mom needs to read it and appreciate who you are as a comic.
Maybe she'll like ask me what I'm doing, and if I bring up stand up, she just kind of like, well, what else is going on?
So I have a nice buttoned up job that I have, and when I started doing more and more of the Comedy Wham stuff, my mom was the same way. Like, she wouldn't acknowledge that I was doing this other thing that was kind of fueling the artistic side of my brain. And now she kind of relents and she, you know, how many interviews are you doing this weekend? Because we all live together.
Oh, that's nice.
My mom and my son, we all share a house. And so now, you know, she's like, how many interviews this weekend?
Yeah, so it's all in her face. She can't
avoid
it.
Yeah, she can't. Yeah, and she sees, you know, how much I put into it. And,
yeah.
Yeah. So.
Oh, that's good that she came around.
Yeah. Yeah, so hopefully, eventually, Mom will
hopefully
come around.
I mean, yeah. I'm honestly... She's not going to listen to this. I'm glad she doesn't acknowledge I do stand-up. Because I don't know if people in the audience know this, but you can kind of tell if someone's going to heckle before they even start. Like, you can see it on them.
Yeah.
And my mom is the type of person that would heckle.
Oh,
she
gosh.
Wouldn't, and she would do it in that, like, you know, I'm sure you've been in a show where someone's heckling and they think they're contributing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They're not being mean.
Right.
They're being positive.
Mm-hmm.
She would do that. And I'm so glad that she's never come to any of my shows.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Oh my god, it'd be a nightmare. she wouldn't be able to handle the idea of like oh my gosh, it's just Samantha's talking, and she would use my full name.
Oh my gosh. That gives me flashbacks to when Vanessa Gonzalez was first starting out in Austin. Her mom and dad would drive up when she would, you know, headline her first few shows. They'd come up, and I don't know if Vanessa like lectured her or trained her ahead of time, but the mom was kind of in the same ballpark that she wanted to heckle, but it was all going to be positive heckling. But yeah,
positive heckling is maybe the worst. Is it heckling? Because if someone's being mean as a heckler, the comedian can be mean back.
Yeah, that's true, and you can't.
If they're being positive, you run the risk of losing the whole audience by, making fun of the person. So there's this, delicate, if anything but this.
Yeah. Who is somebody that you've seen, shut a positive heckler down, and how have they done it? Or how would you approach it?
I normally try to kill them with kindness and then ask them nicely not to talk. But I like it when some people aren't afraid of losing the whole audience. They'll just go in on that person.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have so much, because some of the reason why I feel like I do my material is kind of naughty is because I know I'm very sweet. And I have people are automatically like, oh, many comics, well, they won't say you had a good set. They're like, oh, you're really likable. And it's like, that's nice, but but I know I'm really likable. So
yeah.
It's hard for me to give that up when because if I'm not likable, then now I can't do all my other nasty stuff from this perspective. Now you guys all know me as my true terrible self. Yelling at this person who's just trying to encourage me on stage, and it's always some girl that's like, you go, girl. It's like, stop. I don't go.
Oh my gosh. Well, Sam, what I have observed of you over the last year is you just keep rising and rising, and you're taking on some new projects. The bottom of the barrel. Are you a host? You're full-on host?
I am a co-host.
Co-host.
Bottom of the Barrel is Brian Simpson's show that he does at Mothership, and it's all riff stuff. They pull from the barrel, and the comics make up stuff off the top of their heads. Yeah. Some of them do crowd work. So Brian Simpson is more often than not will be performing on Joe Rogan's show in the other room.
Mm-hmm.
So he normally can't do both at the same time. So I'll normally host the first half and while he's in the other show, and then he'll come in and host the second half. But it's a lot of fun, and I get to meet a lot of cool comedians, and I feel like I've grown a lot from the riffing and going up without a plan.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big deal.
Yeah, I'm very plan-oriented, so having to go up with nothing it's good for my confidence.
Yeah, and I know that I've heard this set of shows with similar concepts, that sometimes you get a gem of a riff going that you can then turn into an actual formal part of your sets.
Oh, yeah. That's great. Yeah. That's the best situation. The problem with the show is a lot of the best riffs are based off of some weird sexual something someone put in the thing. And so, I'll have a great riff, and I'm like, do I really want to bring this up all the time? There's been a couple times also, I'll have things in my notes that I've been trying to do at open mics, and I'll sneak those in there. Mm. If the topic is similar or close to something I'm already talking about, I'll this is an opportunity to try out this new material.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's less pressure because everyone's like, oh, you're just coming up with this right now.
Yeah, right.
No, I'm not.
Closely guarded secret.
But a lot of the stuff is riffing. But every once in a while, you'll hear something, you're like, that's a great joke. And it's like, yeah, that's actually their joke. But I think that's part of if you can make something that you've written seem as if you're just coming up with it, that's kind of the whole goal of stand-up in the first place.
Right. Yeah, great stand-ups. You think, oh, they're just talking.
Yeah,
this hasn't been honed over the last 5, 6, 7
who knows years. How long.
Yeah. And then you just kicked off a show last night.
I did.
You debuted the, I can't get it. It's too many words for me to
know. Celebrity guest show.
Yeah. And it's at Black Rabbit.
It's at Black Rabbit. I think we're going to make it a monthly. It was fun. Nice. I had kind of toyed with the idea of doing like a Sam Lopez and Friends. And then I was like, no one knows who I am. That's not going to sell anything. And it did not do well tickets-wise, I will say. The celebrity guest concept did not change. And we only had like 10 people there.
Oh.
But they were amazing. One of the best audiences. But yeah, it's good. It's just a regular showcase. It's fun.
Yeah.
I really love that room, Black Rabbit. Yeah. It only seats about 50, so really any 10 plus, you're going to have a great show.
Yeah.
And just a small black box theater.
Yeah.
Have you been there yet?
I have not yet.
You'd really like it.
I was thinking about going to, tonight.
It feels kind of like this room right here at Fallout. Yeah. Where it is just, you know, black
very
room,
cozy.
Stage. Yeah, it doesn't seat that many, but you can still get a crowd in.
Yeah. And I love Josh. Everything he does.
Oh, he's great. Yeah. Yeah. And then he runs a podcast studio right out of there.
Yeah, I'm addicted to at least two of his podcasts that he produces. So,
he's a great producer, too.
Yeah. Okay, so you've got the new showcase, hopefully monthly, and a weekly show where you're practicing your riffing. And you just landed Moon Tower Just for Laughs.
I know, that's so exciting.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so stoked.
One of the things that has been somewhat evident, but it was largely driven by the fact that the folks who pick the local acts didn't really have a grasp on who the influx of comics were. Mm-hmm. So they would put, you know, in the first year that Moon Tower reopened, they would just pick names from the pre-COVID times. And now it's nice to see, like, the gelling of, you know, the newer faces that have come to Austin, as well as some of the classic names. So it's fun to see, like, seeing your name. I think Dylan got picked up pretty quickly.
Yeah, Dylan Sullivan. Jason Rodriguez is doing it.
Jason, that was exciting to see.
That was exciting.
Yeah. So it's fun to see, you know, the pond filling with so many different types of comics coming in.
Yeah, so, it's exciting. I kind of honestly, because of what you said, like they mostly were picking previously from the comics that were here before COVID. So it was sort of, not that I thought I wasn't going to get it, but in my mind I was like, oh, I'm not really on their radar.
Yeah.
So it was like, oh my gosh, me?
Yeah, they, there was a very traditional way of being on their radar. And I think now that has changed, because the traditional way that I've shared with somebody else, and they were able to land Moon Tower by following that channel, is you've got to be at CAP. You've got to be seen at CAP. Get to their open mics, kind of make yourself known there, and then maybe ask and be invited to host. And do that a few times a year, and then if you do good, then you know that's your pathway.
Yeah.
And is that anything that you've done over the last year?
Well, I not having a car has kind of kept me away from CAP.
Right. So
because it's by far the farthest club. I have been at CAP, but not through them. I have a lot of friends that come to town, like who are headlining now.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times they'll ask me to host or feature. And so they'll get me in, like, on the shows.
Yeah.
But I only kind of vaguely know Chandy and some of the other women that work there.
Yeah.
But everyone's really nice there. I really love performing
there. Yeah.
And it's an amazing club. Like, easily, like, one of the best rooms in the city. Both rooms. I really love the big showroom. But the side room is great, too. I do that probably more often.
Yeah.
But yeah, I that wasn't how I got in. Although I do feel like since I've gotten Moon Tower, I've gotten more from CAP lately.
Yeah.
Which has been nice.
Yeah.
And it's nice to be up there. It's like it feels like being on the road more because of the vibe. I mean, it's a road club.
Yeah.
So it has that kind of energy.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think they've adapted their ways of figuring out, you know, who's a good fit for Moon Tower. It's still a mystery. I can't 100% predict it, but, you know.
I think, well, they were all there at the, did you come to the Netflix?
I did.
Or are you were there?
The one at the Valve.
The one, you were at the one I was at.
The other ones were too late, so we know my rule, and yeah. But the one at the Valve. Yeah, they were all there.
They were all there.
Yeah.
So that was nice, and that did feel like, okay, maybe this will lead to something. Mm-hmm. So it was nice to see that happen.
Yeah. So what are some things that you're, you seem like somebody who's not going to stay put in a single place for a long time because you've got, you know, progression goals. But I think, again, you're joined at the hip with somebody who's making a big impact here in Austin. Do you have conversations about, you know, maybe going to New York finally or?
No, I think New York is kind of off the radar for a while. Mm-hmm. Unless there was some sort of job that one of us got that we're required to move there.
Yeah.
I think Austin's a really good place to be a comic, especially working. You can fly to any other city.
Yeah.
It's easier to fly to the East and West Coast from here versus being on one side or the other.
Right.
And then Derek and I mean, we're in our 30s. We're both like, oh, we want to have a family one day. And it's just, that's not possible in New York City.
Yeah.
Also, I wouldn't want to do that. That would be so bad. Like, I meet people who grew up in New York City. I'm like, ugh. They're either
a different kind of person.
They're like adults when they're kids.
Yes.
And I mean, that's cool. And it's great for you. But I enjoyed my childhood.
Yeah,
and I think Austin's such a great city. Well, right now it's so young still.
Yeah.
I know it's going to blow up over the next couple years because so many people keep moving here.
Yeah.
But I do feel like there's still the capacity to, you know, live in the suburbs. Mm-hmm. You can get into downtown. Kids can go to a regular school. Derek was a football player growing up, so he's like, we're living in Texas, and all of our kids are going to be football players. Yeah. And I'm like, how are we going to do that while we're away on the weekends doing stand-up? But, okay.
Oh, that means you guys might move out to where I'm living, because we have,
Do you have a big football school?
Big football school.
Oh, yeah. That's all he ever talks about is the big football school.
All right, Lake Travis. Tell
him. Oh, yeah, I've heard about that one.
Yep. Westlake. There you go.
Yeah, what's the one that... a bunch of NFL players have gone
Westlake.
To
Westlake.
Yeah, I think it's Westlake.
And Lake Travis, actually. Both have generated NFL players.
Didn't Justin Tucker, is he from? I know he went to UT. You're not a football person?
I'm not
that's fair.
I do know there are
lots of football.
Current NFL quarterbacks and players that have come from our towns. Or from our schools.
Yeah, that's what he wants.
Yeah, well, there you go.
So, I mean, yeah, it works out. I mean, this is the only place in the country I could imagine having a family and doing stand-up. Like, it was always in the back of our mind in L.A., but there was just no, how do you even do that?
Yeah.
And now it's oh, this is actually something I could, you know, if I put in my, three-year goals and, we have a house, we can have kids, we can figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think we'll stay. And I like it here.
It's cool.
It reminds me of San Diego, Austin. Mm-hmm. It's a very hippie kind of vibe. You know, there's some Republican undertones, but otherwise it's pretty hippie.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Because San Diego's a red city and a blue state, and this is a blue city and a red state. I like that half and half.
Yeah. Well, not so much in the suburbs, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
There's... very conservative. I'm very democratic and liberal, and so I kind of have to keep that.
You have to keep hidden?
Closeted Democrat when it comes to living out in the suburbs.
No, I think it's good. You should live with people who don't believe in what you believe in.
Yeah.
I think it keeps everyone honest.
Yeah.
Because growing up, I remember my parents being friends with people on the opposite side of the party line. My parents are both very conservative Republicans. Uh-huh. And they had plenty of friends that were Democrats, and they would get into arguments all the time. And I just think that's important. You can't have just one group all together, because then people lose track of what reality is.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So I do really, that's what I love about Austin, is it does feel very split politically.
Yeah.
Although this comedy scene does feel very, It's definitely, this is definitely the least woke comedy scene I've ever been a part of.
That's interesting, because you would not have said that before COVID about the scene.
I agree, because the older scene did have more, they felt like more kind of alternative woke energy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to put it besides woke, because it's not necessarily Democratic, Republican. Yeah. It's almost, I don't know.
I mean, I think a very socialist vibe.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that's, to be fair, that is kind of what you get out of the mothership vibe, too. And if you're there a lot, then you're going to be around people. I mean, there's no denying that Rogan and Hinchcliffe kind of came here because they knew the tax situation was way better for their pocketbooks.
I'm sure.
And so that's a very conservative.
That, I think, also just the politics in California, they were done with that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't like to think about politics at all. So okay, I love it when there's.
We'll stop.
I like it when it's like half this, half that, and I can be like, "You guys keep fighting. I'm gonna go get a coffee."
Yeah. Well, let's just keep talking about Post Malone.
Okay.
And JID. I won't get to see.
Aw.
So, is there anything we haven't talked about that you want people to know about you?
Oh, I do a podcast with Dylan Sullivan and Jeffrey Berner. It's called Mom Cats.
Oh, I did not find this in my research.
It's a little known podcast.
Oh, okay.
It's something we literally just do to get together. Uh-huh. I mean, we do it and we put it out.
Yeah.
But the joy of it is that the three of us have all been friends for a long time. And I would say out of our group of friends, we're the most sensitive. So when we get together, we all like kind of like girl out.
Oh my gosh.
And it is nice. So we do it normally on Sundays, and we just hang out and like talk. And there's really no structure. A lot of times, like, I'll listen back to an episode and be like, we should never have put this out. This is absolutely terrible. And then other times it's like really great. So if you're interested in like a hit or miss podcast. Or just really, it's really honest. It's fun.
Yeah.
So I do that. It's called Mom Cats. It's on the Dylan Sullivan Show Network on YouTube.
I didn't know he had his own network.
He has his own network. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
Do I do anything else? I was recently on The Solid Show that Derek Poston and Ahsaan Ahmad do. That was really fun. But I don't think I've got anything else to promote.
Well, you'll be seen at Moon Tower.
I'll be seen at Moon Tower in April. Follow me on Instagram. All my shows are on there.
Yeah.
Tuesdays at the Mothership.
Don't make last minute plans. You're not going to get in. You got to buy your ticket in advance.
I sell out.
At least 2 weeks. Minimum 2 weeks.
Sometimes the late show. But that's too late for you.
All right. All right. Are you ready for your closing question?
Oh, sure.
One word to describe your future.
Oh, brilliant.
Brilliant. Yes.
Brilliant. I don't know. I do a lot of manifestation. Brilliant isn't a word I've ever used before in there. But I do always try to, like, emphasize positivity and I always want to look up, so that feels good. You know, like a shining star.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Everything's good.
Yeah. Well, you're definitely on the right track with comedy. I love that you're married to, you know, somebody you've been with for 7-8 years. That's the great path. And then you've got, you know, this plan and vision of what your future is as married people are.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
It's nice to plan with someone who's going in the same direction.
Yeah.
They did. That's how it felt when we got together. It's like, oh, wow, we want to go the same way. Let's do it together.
Yeah. Oh, how fun. I've watched, I can't follow what the evolution is, but it used to be called Spoil the Beans. I watched an episode, part of an episode, where you were doing Pee Wee's Playhouse.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
I mean, how long ago would that have been?
That would have been probably 2 or 3 years ago,
okay.
I guess. So Spoil the Beans was a podcast Derek and Ahsaan had started where Derek would explain the entirety of a movie to Ahsaan. Then during the pandemic, we all were in different places, so I became Asan for a while.
Yeah.
It's so fun. I love listening. I think I've seen so many movies that I've just heard him tell me. But then when we all got here, they wanted to restart up and do another podcast together that was more both of them, because Derek was doing a lot. Watching a movie and explaining it to someone else is so hard. I've done it for him like twice, and both times I've picked like movies that are like musicals, or like I did Magic Mike and it's a lot of dancing. So you could kind of get out of some of it. But it takes, like, I would watch a movie like 3 or 4 times and then like write so many notes. I don't know how he was doing it. It's so time consuming. But now their podcast is more like game related, and then every once in a while they'll do a movie still.
Well, it was fun to see and know that, you know, however long ago this was, now they're married.
Yeah.
And they're in Austin, and it's kind of fun. All right. Well, that has been a wrap on Comedy Wham Presents. Sam Lopez. Sam, tell us where we can find you on social media, and go ahead and plug your projects again if you want.
You can find me on Instagram at @bestsamlopez. Please come to the Mothership Tuesdays, 7:30 and 10:30 for Bottom of the Barrel. Follow my Instagram for other future shows, including the celebrity guest show at Black Rabbit. That's it. Oh, and Momcats.
And Momcats.
The other podcast.
All right, great. We hope you've enjoyed learning about how Sam got to be the comedic genius that you heard today just as much as I have. This has been Comedy Wham Presents Sam Lopez. I'm Valerie, and that's been funny. Thank you, Sam.
Thank you. Oh, that was so fun. Oh, I didn't even use the sound machine.
Oh, you didn't.
It's not working.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no. It literally just worked.
I know. We heard it before. Aw.